Welcome back to another episode of Guardians of the MCU. We are recording on November 13th, and we are talking all things Eternals. You got the girls here today. It's me, Lizzie, and my co-host, Sheba. Hi, Sheba.
Hey. So excited to do this.
Oh my gosh. How ready are you to talk about this movie?
So ready, but also not ready at the same time because I'm like, there's so many things. I feel like after we'll end this, I'm like, oh man, we first talk about this.
I know. And we're going to want to watch it again, which is not a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly. I've already watched it twice. And I think I
did. You?
Yeah, I loved it the first time and I loved it just as much the second time.
I haven't been able to go back and watch it again. I've only seen it the first time. I went the Friday of opening. But I really do want to go back again and see it again. Because I just feel like with any movie, I feel like the second time is always like the best.
Exactly.
Because I think you like the surprises out of the way, even though I love the surprises. I love like a good shocking moment. But I do feel like seeing it coming really adds context and you're able to like look for things and really connect to the movie better the second time and the third and fourth and 100th.
Exactly.
Okay. We are a Random Chatter Network podcast. You can check us out at randomchatter.com for more information about our shows. We also have membership through Patreon, which we would love for you to check out. And you can get access to the Escape Hatch Discord channel. We have show merchandise from Tee Public. Yo, check it out. I don't think we have any network announcements other than that Lizzie and Sheba are back again.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure, I think the only thing is that there's a lot of like Disney Plus stuff going on throughout all the different shows.
For sure, because Disney Plus.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone's going to be talking about Disney Plus things. We're recording our Disney Plus one tomorrow on November 14th. But this episode comes out after that episode. So, you know, that's what it is.
Disney Plus takeover of the Random Chatter Network. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into it. So we're going to start with our initial thoughts, which we were sort of getting into a little bit there before I decided to go into the shop talk.
Yep.
But Sheba, overall thoughts when you went to see it the first time, the second time, what were you feeling, thinking? What do you think?
I absolutely loved it. I just was blown away by how much I was just in love with the entire movie. And then it went through my mind. It was really either like just so much excitement about the movie and then annoyance as to why critics hated it so much. And some of my friends were like, I understand. I'm like, fine, I can understand. But also it's not, you know, not the worst Marvel movie ever, which we'll get into later on. But overall, I absolutely loved it. And I, like I said, I saw it twice and would definitely love to watch it more than that.
Yeah. I also really, really liked it so much. I think it's hard for me to say I loved it because I loved Shang-Chi so much. I feel like, and I don't like to compare, and it doesn't deserve comparison, but because I walked out of Shang-Chi just like enchanted and like just completely in love with it. So I walked out with a different feeling than that. So because I think that was really like just truly loving a movie at first sight. What I walked out here with was that I really liked it. I really, really did. I want to stress that. And I loved the characters. What I've been seeing bouncing around the internet is that a lot of people that liked it think it will age well. And I really agree with that assessment. I think that this is such a tough way to bring in so many characters. I mean, even if you're thinking like Guardians of the Galaxy, that's like so many, that's so fewer characters than here as an origin story. Everybody's going to get more time. And I feel like what I wanted more than anything was just more time with all of these characters. And it's just not possible in this format. Yeah. So I think from the critic's perspective, which I do not give credit where credit is due in that case, I really dislike the idea that just because like, I feel like everybody's like mad that it gets formulaic, but then as soon as it breaks formula, everybody's mad that it's different. And I like, despise that.
Yeah.
I have no tolerance for that whatsoever.
Agreed.
So I think that like it is very meaty and they're covering wide spans of time and so many characters and really deep issues of like family and loyalty and mission and like what does it mean when like we've been betrayed and we thought we were doing one thing and here we are.
Yeah.
We've been betrayed by our very mission, by our very creator. So I think that there's something there's such deep elements going on here. And I feel like, well, I guess what I felt was I wanted way more time. I felt like it was such a short period of time. I could have done with definitely a two-parter. I could have done with a Disney Plus series. So from that perspective, I did wish that maybe this had happened in a different format. But mm-hmm. I did like what I saw so much. So much of what I saw I liked. And it really just made me excited to see more of these characters. And from that perspective, I think it really will age well once we get more. We're going to look back and be like, oh my gosh, this is such a great way to start this. I think the origin stories we've had besides Guardians of the Galaxy, I keep wanting to say Guardians of the MCU. besides Guardians of the Galaxy have been singular. So we've got Ant-Man and Captain America and Iron Man, and everybody gets such a intense moment to be singular and be themselves. And even in Guardians of the Galaxy, you're really focusing in on Star-Lord, and everybody else isn't not about their origin story. It is about getting to know them, but it's not their origin story. This is literally all of their origin story at once. And that's a lot. That's a lot.
And even going into the movie, they kept emphasizing that this was Cersei's story. This is Cersei's mm-hmm. story. So it kind of similar to what you were saying about Guardians of the Galaxy, that was mostly Peter Quill's story. And then we got the other characters in a little bit here and there. So it kind of made sense that they were focusing more on Cersei and then just included the others a little bit here and there. So I guess maybe that's why I was like, again, just like you, I did want more with the other characters as well. With this many characters, it is hard to go in complete depth with all of them. Even if it was a Disney Plus series, they still wouldn't be able to go into complete depth with all the characters. So they'd have to still cut out a lot of stuff. So I think as an introduction, it's great that this is what we get. And then if we get more, you know, if we get a sequel or however else they're going to be put through the MCU, I'm sure we'll look back and go, okay, yeah, this made sense to the context of the rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah, because to be honest, I mean, it feels like the way the Avengers were built up and everybody's sort of getting their own beats and their own introductions and their own stories is really what we want, is really what I want for the Eternals. And I think that's the part where I feel like I'm missing out because I loved when they were on Babylon and you're getting to see them interact like as they're going through the ages and you're seeing them interact with cultures and speak different languages. I was actually listening to NPR and they had the guy that they reached out to translate everything into Babylonian. They had him on there and he was like super excited to just like translate things to Babylonian for the Marvel Universe. I thought that was so cute. But I thought that was so interesting to me. And I thought, but you're right about Cersei being like the main character. I really felt like it was such an ensemble, even mm-hmm. though they did. Obviously, Cersei does have such a very strong story throughout the thing that really sets above everybody else's, but it is still all of their origin story. We see their beginnings and we see their mission and we see them, you know, it is really their introduction all together. And I think if it had been more of a Cersei, I feel like maybe if it had been more, that might have set it up to be, I don't know, to have more of those tones of just focusing in on Cersei. Maybe I felt like it could have focused on her more somehow. I don't know. I mean, it definitely was her story, but
yeah.
And I guess that because so many of the other characters became my favorites, I was like, but what about them? I want more.
Exactly. Like, again, I loved the movie. The fact that, so I guess since we're going into characters and plot, we'll kind of include that in part now.
Do it.
With Kingo, because Kingo is, you know, the actor Kamal Nanjiani is Pakistani. That's his background. But he's playing a Bollywood star. And I thought it was really interesting that they got to include that aspect of South Asian, just South Asian representation. And I was watching a interview with Kamal Nanjiani, and he was saying that when he was told he was going to be playing a Bollywood star, he was like, listen, I can't dance Bollywood. So can we make sure that is not included in it? Let's make it, you know, like put in something else, like an action scene or something. And Chloe Zhao was like, yeah, don't worry about it. You don't have to do a Bollywood scene. There's no going to be no dancing. We'll do an action scene. It's fine. they get on set, and then she's like, "Just kidding, I lied. You're going to be doing a dance." And he's like, "Wait, what?" And so, like, right at the last minute, for like a month, he was like trying to learn how to do Bollywood dancing and all that kind of stuff. So, like, my friend and I, who are both like, we've watched Bollywood movies and we're both South Asian, we looked at each other and we were like, "Oh, his dancing isn't that great." I just kind of wrote it off to, you know what? He's like the Bollywood, like the action stars that can do the action, but they can't do the dancing so well. So I wrote it off and was like, "It's fine." But like, I appreciated that he tried his best to do the Bollywood dancing, and that they included it in there. And even just like the subtle jokes about when Sprite asks him, like, "Hey, how are you a Bollywood star for this long and nobody questions it?" I thought they would like make a jab about like Bollywood stars and how they, no matter how old they are, they're still acting in like their 30s with like 20-year-old actresses, and nobody bats an eye, like bats their eyelashes at it kind of thing. And I thought they were going to make that joke, but my friend was like, no, I think that's too much for them. I don't think anybody else but us Bollywood fans would understand it. I'm like, that's fair. But I thought that was kind of hilarious because I was like, well, I mean, like, Shah Rukh Khan has been acting in Bollywood films for a very long time. Nobody has questioned it. But to be fair, Kingo has been acting, had been acting in Bollywood movies for like centuries. So it's a little different. But still, I thought it would just be kind of funny if they'd included that part.
I
But
think
that, yeah.
he kind of played it off as like cocky and like he didn't have to know the steps because he's like the biggest star. And as someone, I can't determine,
Exactly.
like, I adore Bollywood and I've seen some Bollywood. And like, honestly, like, my introduction to it was dancing, not Dancing with the Stars. Dear God, I don't watch Dancing with the Stars. So You Think You Can Dance, which is like one of my favorite shows from when I was a kid, not a kid, but in college. And they would do Bollywood week. And like, I loved that introduction to that dance style and that cultural, it's such a significant cultural dance, like something very important. And I just always loved that week because it was something outside of my culture and a way to, you know, just see something different and learn more about something else. And I do not know the minutiae of the hand movements and what's right and what's wrong. Although from watching So You Think You Dance, I should, because they were very, very specific and critical on the show, which I appreciate. But it so the to me, the scene came off as like he's this cocky star. He's like, maybe he knows the moves, maybe he'll play it off. Who cares? Like, that's how it sort of came off to me as a non-Bollywood aficionado.
Yeah, and that's honestly, that's how I took it too. And I'm like, I know that there are a lot of like action stars that they're more into the action and they'll do a dance or so, but you're like, oh, their dancing isn't that great. But you just kind of like, you're like, yeah, it's fine, whatever. That's what I did with it. I was like, yeah, it's fine, whatever. He's like you said, just he's so confident that he's like, yeah, I'm doing amazing, and everybody else is terrible. Like, even the joke he makes to one of the girls, he's like, you that's better. It's like 10% better, but it's not, it's not great, but you're doing better. That is the exact vibe I was getting from him too. So it didn't even bother me. I had watched a YouTube video where people were like, well, his Bollywood dancing wasn't that great. And I was like, I feel like we're nitpicking now, because I feel like they just, in the context of his character, it fit with his dancing style, fit his character kind of thing. And
Definitely write it off. I can definitely make an excuse for it, but I will say, from a Marvel standard, to get something culturally right does feel like something. I mean, I understand that it's his dancing skill that we're talking about, and that is its own thing. But I think Marvel raises the bar, in my opinion. And so, if you're going to get something culturally correct, then that's, I think that's a standard that they've set, and I think that it's fair to say, you know, if that wasn't going to be something he was going to be great at, why didn't we pivot and do something else? Since it is such an important part of the culture. You know what I mean? So I get that. I get it.
Yeah. Or at least letting the background dancers, because usually what happens, like, if that was the case and that was how his character was supposed to be, they should have made it super obvious that his dancing is really bad and everybody else is
Yeah,
really
go
good.
farther.
Yeah,
Yeah.
they should have let the background dancers go out of their way to be extra good. It's almost like they were holding back so that he didn't look so bad. But in fact, if they had let them, do their thing, and he was like, yeah, you're not so bad, it would be like, all right, well, Kingo's just delusional now that, he's actually the worst one, but they're the better ones. It would have played out a little bit better and differently. But hey, they learned from it kind of thing. And then next time, if they include a Bollywood scene, they'll know what to do.
Can we talk about how cool Kingo's powers are with like the shooting of the, like, how, when I saw that in the trailer, I got so excited, and then seeing it in the on the big screen was just so phenomenal.
And the fact that he used Dishoom, because Dishoom is usually, instead of like, you know, you're going like pew pew or bang bang, like that kind of thing. As South Asians, a lot of us did like Dishoom, Dishoom. Like that was how our gun noises. Yeah. So he goes, Dishoom. My friend and I both start laughing because we're like, oh my God, my childhood. This is what we used to do as kids. Like I still to this day, I'll be like, Dishoom, Dishoom, like, you know, just randomly. So with the fact that he did that, it made me crack up. And I felt so like, it was a moment where I was like, hey, they included something that is relatable, very relatable to me. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah, and isn't that the exact thing that I feel like you and I, and definitely the guys we've talked about this before on Guardians of the MCU, is that like, that's what it's all, that is what representation is about, is when somebody who isn't, you know, the typical, like if everybody who's typical is making a movie, then the typical thing is like, it's just nobody, you know, it's just, it's amazing to see that. And I've never even heard of Dishoom, and I think it's amazing. And I think it's like, that makes me so more excited and happy, and like, thank God for Chloe. And I bet Kumail was like, hey, we'll do this thing. And she's like, oh my God, put it in. Like, I can imagine them just having that conversation.
Because I was not expecting it at all. I was just like, all right, he's just going to, you know, shoot the thing, whatever. And then he goes, Dishoom. And my friend and I lost it. We were like, oh my God, wait, what? Did he just say Dishoom? Is Dishoom in a Marvel movie now? And I'm like, this is so great. Because
Now go back and watch it. I mean, that part is gonna make me so happy because of you. I love that.
So speaking of moving on to like other characters, Ajax, because Salma Hayek did an interview recently where she was talking about seeing herself in her costume for the first time, and she was like, as she was explaining it, she was like in tears saying, you know, I never saw myself or anyone that looked like me on screen, and it was a big moment for her. And being able to kind of see Salma Hayek, first of all, Salma Hayek is absolutely fantastic and gorgeous, and I love her to death. And being able to see her on screen was just, it was just exciting. And I loved the fact that, you know, her Spanish, the accent that she has was still, like, they didn't ask her to change it. They didn't ask for any changes or anything like that. They included it in there. And again, that's lovely for representation as well, because there are a lot of people who English is their second language and they have a little bit of an accent, and to be able to see yourself in a Marvel movie just like as you are is wonderful. And I loved Ajax as a character. You know, again, like you were saying, wanting to see more of her. I wasn't expecting her to be gone in the first, like the beginning of the movie. I was like, wait, what?
I was gutted because I adore Salma Hayek. I have loved her forever, like my whole life.
Yeah.
And I was literally like, no.
I know. I was like,
there were more flashbacks of her. I was like, maybe there'll be something. I was so devastated.
Because you know how they were talking about that they're all robots, and then, you know, they come back. And so I was like, well, is she really dead? She's probably going to come back. Because technically she's a robot, so she's not technically dead, so she'll come back. And I think they were saying that she has signed on for more movies. So I don't know if it's I don't know if it's like her present kind of like presently or like as a flashback, I don't know, but she has signed on to more movies. So, you know, we will get to see more of Ajax in some way or the other. But I thought it was really cool that we got a chance to see a leader, like a strong leader as a woman, but who also later on changes her mind. Like at the beginning, you see her like, nope, Arishem, Arishem, Arishem. And then all of a sudden at the end, like later on, she's like, you know what? Maybe we were wrong. Maybe what we're doing isn't right. And that's what causes the rift between her and Icarus, is that moment where she goes, oh, maybe we made a mistake. And I liked that they showed that you are allowed to believe something wholeheartedly, and then at some point go, when you are presented with new information, going, maybe it wasn't, maybe this isn't right. And I really liked that they showed that.
Yeah. And in fact, finding strength in that, and that's not a weakness or a failing. It's really a strength to be able to take in information and continuously make judgment calls based on what you know, because 20 years ago, you didn't know what you know now. And exactly. That always color how you look at the world. And I agree. I felt that way too about her character and about that whole part of her. I think I watched also an interview with her where she was talking about being Mexican and how never being seen on screen. And she, I mean, as somebody who came to Hollywood, in her 20s and was one of the very few Mexican actresses in Hollywood at the time, you know, she is somebody who was that for so many little girls in Hollywood. And now she's able to be that in a different field in superheroes. And I think that's so as someone who just loves her in general, mm-hmm. I also just love her speaking about that and really being somebody who's pointing to it and saying, look, this is important. Look at what this means to people. Look at what it means to me. And I've been in this business forever. And I'm, you know, it's so easy, I think, to be jaded by Hollywood at this point. And she's enchanted by being a superhero. I think it's wonderful.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
So I love her. And I want to go straight into Icarus from that because, for sure. dear God almighty. The way I walked in thinking, I mean, I loved him throughout, even though. Okay, I'm just going to say, yep. I'm so sorry, but even though I loved him, I don't care. He is the king of the North for me, and I'm never going to, I can't give him up. I will not sacrifice him. I will not.
Yeah,
I thought one thing, and it wasn't that. And I was shocked. I was shocked by his whole storyline, which is brilliant. Brilliant to sort of switch a very... He is that Superman character. He is that
Omni-Man. If you've ever seen Invincible,
Sorry, say that again.
If you've watched the show Invincible, he kind of...
Oh, I haven't.
A lot of... Yeah, that's pretty much the whole premise is what if you had like a Superman-like type character from a different planet, but I don't want to spoil too much, but there's a moment where he kind of... There's an Icarus type moment.
Interesting. I really was surprised by his storyline just because I adore Richard Madden and that he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just my Game of Thrones love for him runs so deep and he's been in so many things I love. So I was so excited for him going into it. I just had no idea what was coming.
Well, no, me neither.
I was shocked when he chose loyalty and it turned out he had killed Ajax and I was so devastated.
I know. I didn't even think about it. I was like, the only thing I could think of was that I'm like, okay, you know, Deviant killed Ajax. That's why they can heal. That was literally, I was like, okay, okay. Right. And then all of a sudden, right at the end when he goes to see her, because I was wondering that scene in the trailer where he and Ajax are talking. And I was like, that's not in the movie. And I'm like, oh, I guess they didn't include it. They just wanted to throw us off that she was in the movie. And then when they showed that scene, I was like, oh no.
It clicked. I know. Then, felt the same way
right when they showed that was this is what happened, isn't it?
It's like the TikTok sound is like oh no. That's how
Marvel
I felt.
And was
I
like
literally
just kidding.
Devastation.
Exactly.
And I was like, oh. But I love that they used that scene in the trailer and then sort of had a big old switcheroo because you definitely thought that scene was going to come way before
that. Exactly, because when they go to see her, I'm like, it's nighttime, but it's daytime when they had that scene. So where does that fit in? And then when they found her dead, I was like, that doesn't... Yeah, I was like, it doesn't make any sense. What is happening? Like, where is this going?
Oh my God, it was so brilliant. I do love a switcheroo like that where you do think, like you go in thinking one thing and then you really come out with his devotion to Ajax's whole... Like the way that he was brought into the mission via Ajax and via her leadership. And then to feel, I'm sure he felt betrayed by her in a way because she had been loyal and had taught this loyalty. All of a sudden, she's seeing a new worldview that he can't see. And I find that so fascinating. I think his story is very interesting to me. Because I think it is surprising. He seems like somebody... You know, especially because of his love for Cersei and their, them going through the decades and centuries together and then this being what rips them apart and love not prevailing. You know what I mean? Like, what?
I know.
Prevail. And what's going on?
And the fact that, like you said, he was so loyal, even when, and you could kind of see it, like, especially if you like watching it the second time around, you see what he's thinking and you're like, oh, it did make sense that he did this, because he, even when he's talking to Cersei, I mean, to Ajak at one point, they're looking at Cersei and Ajak is like, oh, you should tell her how you feel kind of thing. And he's like, oh, but don't worry. It's not going to, my mission is not going to like be affected by my feelings for Cersei. And you're like, oh, he definitely puts the mission above Cersei. And it's not as obvious, like it is obvious, but I think in retrospect, it's more obvious. You're like, oh yeah, he did. It makes sense that this is his path, that he was going to put this in front of anything else. But at the time when I first watched it, I was like, oh, you know, he's just very loyal to Ajak and, you know, whatever, it is what it is, you know, kind of thing. But then watching it a second time, I was like, oh no, that was definitely a little bit of a red flag there for you, Icarus. But it makes sense with the character.
Richard Madden plays it so well, because I think he plays to that very moment, not to the whole, like what's coming or what's past. I think he plays to like, he really does love her. And if he can spend some years with her, obviously he chooses to. And he never compromises his mission, as you see later on. I mean, that was basically, it was like frosting for him to be able to have that at all, but it wasn't the cake, right? So like he was like, you know, it is what it is. I have a mission, I have a purpose, and if I get to have like a couple years with this wonderful woman, like great. But like he even, that's like in the parts when they're all together, you can see that he's not agreeing, he's not with everybody when they're all starting to talk. What I thought was interesting is how Kingo was like, I'm out, deuces, like that. I was sad about that.
I know, me too. I was kind of hoping he would like pop in out of nowhere and be like, I'm back, you know, kind of thing. But then I was like,
a really big mistake of the writing to not have him.
Yeah.
Because when you saw Icarus, even though he was against them, when Cersei went into her, like their unibrain, unimind or whatever.
Yeah.
And Icarus was pulled in. Are you telling me that wherever Kingo was, he couldn't have been pulled in too? That seems incorrect. And I think it would have been really beautiful for him to be like on a Bollywood set or wherever he was.
Yeah.
And then to be pulled in, because he is part of the family and he is an Eternal. And at the end of the day, he would have been pulled into the Unimind. I think that's very weird. Exactly. And I feel like it's an oversight or something strange. I need to hear more from like the creators, because I just think that feels wrong to me.
Yeah. And
you feel that way too?
That's exactly what I feel like. But then at the back of my mind, I'm like, okay, it's Marvel. They always have a rhyme and reason for everything. So maybe either it's that's part of another movie, or we have another story for Kingo, or that wherever he was or whatever's going on, that's going to pop up somewhere else at some point. So I'm like, all right, I'm not going to get too mad right now. I'm like, I'm going to wait for a little bit, because Marvel never just leaves things just like that. And the fact that he is such a big character and just left and didn't, and we don't know where he is after that point, something's up. And it's very unlike Marvel to just leave a character and be like, we're never going to touch on it again. So I feel like it's going to come up somewhere in some other movie or in one of the TV shows. I don't know, but it's going to pop up somewhere. And I'm just waiting for that moment. And I think I'm just being more positive about it. I'm like, yeah, it'll show up. It'll come. It'll come when again.
Yeah. I think it was weird, because then at the end he comes to pick up Sprite, and like, you know, then he comes and has like a touch point at the end of the movie where he's a part of it. Like that would have been a great time. Even if it was a throwaway line, like if he was like, guys, that Unimind was super weird, right? Like, I feel like that would have been enough, because I just needed to know that he felt that was happening and that he still had connectivity to the Eternals in that moment. And that's what I felt, like a disconnect in the like severing of him, like just leaving and not being part of that felt. But I like what you're saying, and I'm going to take what you're saying instead of what I'm saying.
Because I kept thinking about that. I'm like, but then he came back and nobody was mad at him, and nobody was like, hey, like we have to deal with this without you. Like, and then they're just like, yeah, here, take Sprite. Like it just like nothing had happened kind of thing. So I'm like, there's gotta be something, because Marvel wouldn't just randomly be like, we didn't notice. And if that's what they did, take
what you're saying. And I like it. I just feel like they would have been like, yo, could have used you in the Unimind, bro.
Right. And that's exactly what. Just going back, just thinking about, because I watched Dune before watching this, and there were so many times, because I'd never read the book, and I'd be like, I'm confused. Where is this going? What is happening? Why isn't this going? Like, there was a lot of question marks for me for that movie as well, but I managed to go, it's okay. There's another movie. it'll get my questions will get answered later. And I haven't read the books. It'll get answered later. So that's what I was doing with this. I was like, I don't know the answer, but I'm sure it'll get answered later. So I think I enjoyed it more because I was like, because I was like, it'll happen.
It'll happen in the MCU. Yeah. So fair enough.
That's why I think I enjoyed it more than a lot of other people had, because like, I know a lot of people were like, it doesn't make sense. I just went, well, it's going to show up later, so it'll be fine. And I think that's why I was okay with it, because I'm like, yeah, it's fine. So a lot of the things that people had issues with it, I just brushed it off to, it'll get answered later.
I love that for you and for me and for us, everybody.
Exactly.
I want to talk really very quickly as we're talking about Icarus about the controversial Icarus and Cersei sex scene, which I felt was not controversial at all, but also weird. I did feel like it was just so weird.
Yeah. And so the first time I saw it, my friend just looking at, huh? And like, just like randomly, like just looked at me like as a what's going on kind of thing. The second time I watched this, somebody actually like vocally went, what? Like was so confused. It was like, what the? It just was oddly, like it didn't need to be there. And it's not like I'm a prude or anything. It just didn't need to be there to that extent, I guess. It was just off.
It was very off. And I feel like there's a way to do it that, like, yeah. I don't think that there isn't a place for things like a sex scene or anything like that in Marvel, because of course there is. Of course that happens. And of course, like, what, superheroes don't get it on? Give me a break. Like, I don't mind seeing it. I felt like the lighting was weird and the location was weird and the shot was weird. So it wasn't necessarily a sex scene for me as much as it was like, what if we had a sex scene in here and it was like forced? Right. So I felt like, why
That's
did you
exactly,
do that?
Because like, I thought after they panned off, I was like, okay, it was implied that that's what was happening. And I was like, all right. And if they didn't include it, it wouldn't have been really a big issue. It's not like that including it was like a big, it's not like something that, you know, we needed to see the representation for it, I guess. If they didn't include it, it would have been like, okay, the storyline wouldn't have changed at all. So it was just awkwardly placed, like they just wedged it in there because they were like, we need to put this in there because, and I was like, but if it wasn't there, it would have been a perfectly good movie too.
Right. Can I just have like a very brief 3 seconds on the clock to talk about how I think that superhero sex scenes would go so differently if you actually thought about how a superhero might actually have sex?
Right.
And I feel like Eternals aren't like doing it missionary on The Rock. I feel like they'd be the stars having like the most ridiculous, like, and not that you have to get graphic with it, but there's a different way to show it that's like, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting a little bit, maybe I thought about it too much, obviously, but like it's so bland.
And they're both robots. So you're like, there's a lot of questions that if you were going to put it in, that should have been answering those questions. Not so much the, like, because if you were going to do something with it, then it should have been something like different. Like, hey, they're both robots. Like they didn't know here. Now they know, like just something like that.
Know. Yeah. Anything just, but what happened was it was very strange and very like robotic in a way, but not in a way that like, it lacked the intimacy that I think they wanted to show. I felt it was weird. And as controversial as that, it wasn't. And it was, just felt off to me. And it was like, everyone was like, you know, we probably need to put in a Marvel movie one time as a sex scene. What if we just throw it in? And everyone was like, I guess. Okay, here's one. Like, and I feel like that's how it came about.
Yeah.
And
I wonder,
decision for the characters, which I never agree with it being like anything being forced just because. I feel like it should always come from an organic place, especially something like an intimate sex scene like that. Yep. Why would it be first?
That's exactly. I was like, it was just like you said, it just felt like somebody was like, you know what, let's see what people are gonna think, and let's put a sex scene in and see what people think, and if it goes over well, we can include them in future movies. And I'm like, but that's
not like that though.
Yeah, I'm okay with like definitely tasteful, or it makes sense towards like to the plot, or you're trying to show something, like it makes sense, but it just felt like they were like, here you go. And it
for sex scene's sake, because let me tell you, like, I think the scenes between Thena and Gilgamesh were much more intimate and much more beautiful. The scenes between Druig and Makari were much more intimate. There were moments between Cersei and Icarus that I felt were more intimate than that scene. And I think you can do so much more Without adding that in, I have no problem adding that in. Yo, I watch like Bridgerton and Outlander. I watch all kinds of stuff with sexy scenes in them, and I'm fine with that. I don't like when it feels like it's lacking the exact thing that you're trying to put in by putting that there. Like, oh, they're intimate. Here's this scene. Yeah. No, you can show intimacy and you can show closeness in so many different ways. So to feel like you have to use that is very bland to me as a writing tool and as a visual like director. So I'm glad we're on the same page. I just felt like,
I was weird. Like, and then even the second time I was like, it's weird. Like it's weird. I thought maybe like the second time I'd be like, all right, I know what's coming. And I was like, it's still weird. It's still, if it wasn't there, I would have been perfectly fine without it. And like you said, definitely not, you know, I'm not opposed to like having like seeing sex scenes or anything like that. It's just that sometimes if it feels forced and awkward, then I'm like, okay, why was this here?
What it made me think a little bit is the scene in Harry Potter when Ron like sees Hermione and Harry together when he's trying to kill the Horcrux, and it's creepy and like black and white-ish.
Yeah,
like is grayscale. That's how I felt about it. I was ew!
Yeah, I was like, why is this here? Why
I was like, oh, this didn't do what you were hoping to make it seem like real sexy and intimate. Just creepy. Which brings us to Cersei. Let's get into the big kahuna here of the movie. Gemma Chan is a treasure and she must be protected at all costs because I adore her.
Yep. And she's wonderful. Cool. Wonderful. Yeah. And I appreciate it. I liked her character. Liked how, you know, at the beginning she's unsure of herself and she's not, you know, because Ajak has left her to become the leader. You can still tell she's kind of like, I don't know, should I be? Shouldn't I be? You know, they're right. Icarus is stronger. Maybe he should be it. Like, and she's very unsure of what she should do. But then as the time goes on, she's like, no, wait, you know what? Ajak has entrusted me with this. And it totally makes sense why Ajak would have left her in charge, is because Ajak, like we were talking about earlier, she had changed her mind about how she felt about humans and their mission. So obviously she was going to leave it and entrust the mission. She was going to entrust that power to somebody who also felt the same way. And she knew that Cersei did feel the same way. Whereas Icarus, clearly, you know, the mission and removing all humans was his main thought process. So she was like, yeah, probably not with him. And so it made sense why Ajak left everything to Cersei.
But you know what's interesting is I think for a while it was going to be him. And I think Ajak, for sure, he was the heir apparent until Ajak started thinking different. Until the Thanos thing really, like, I think flipped her. And then she chose Cersei. Because you can tell when there's the flashbacks that he is her choice. Like, you feel that he's her choice. He is her confidant. He's got a lot of, he has her ear. And I think that I think that choice comes so much later. And I think that's what's surprising to Cersei, because Cersei never was in that right hand of the father position or the mother position. You know what I mean? So she wasn't raised to be the leader. She wasn't being groomed to take over. Icarus was. And I think that switch is very interesting for her character too, to wrestle with, because that's not how she was interacting with the world, and she was falling in love with humanity, and literally and figuratively, you know, throughout the centuries. And also then when Dane comes along, she's literally in a relationship with somebody, you know, and how that has affected her worldview. And so for Ajak to then flip and say, no, I've got to go with the person who loves the people as much as I do. She's not ready. And and so that is really beautifully portrayed by Gemma. I just love the scenes in Babylon when Icarus is really like falling in love with her. And what's interesting about the Icarus dynamic is he's falling in love with someone who's in love with humanity. And he is against, like, he's essentially, his purpose is against that. And I think there's a beautiful tragedy in that story, and as we see Icarus flying himself into the sun at the end, there is a beautiful tragedy to that story that is so very nuanced. And I think that the movie obviously can only do so much with the time you're given, but I think it did it really beautifully. And I think, again, as we get more Gemma in the future, we're going to get some layers into that I think are going to be really, really fantastic.
Yeah, Agreed. We can talk also about, because we mentioned Gilgamesh and Athena. I'm going to talk about Gilgamesh first because I absolutely love that man. And the fact that they showed him being so kind and loving and just a wonderful, wonderful eternal, because they're not human. So, a wonderful character. It just, the way that he treated Athena with such kindness, respect, and being so gentle with her is just like, I honestly, I fell in love with him. I was like, and now I love Gilgamesh because just everything about him. The most heartbreaking scene is when they tell him that Ajax has died, and he's like, he's all excited. He's like, "Hey, do you want to have some pie?" And then they're like, "Ajax died," and he just stops,
And the
and
pie
he
falls.
pulls and the pie falls and breaks, and you can see his heart breaking at that exact moment, and it's just so well acted. It just, my heart broke with him, even, and like, it just, I can't say enough good things about Gilgamesh because I love him so much, and I didn't know what to expect going into the character with this character, because for the most part, a lot of this stuff was focused on Circe, Icarus, even on Athena as well, not as much on Gilgamesh. So I wasn't didn't know what to expect. But the fact that we got so much of that, and I loved that they showed a man being in touch with his emotions, sharing his emotions and thoughts and feelings. It was, I loved it.
Yeah, and that their love, like they had a deep love for each other that wasn't romantic, in nature. It was very much, it felt very familial. I mean, I felt like it could have probably been portrayed as romantic if they wanted to go there, but I felt like the way they portrayed it was so beautiful because it didn't have anything to do with like, any of that. They weren't like making out and anything like that. I would have been fine with it, but. But I thought it was a beautiful way to portray a different kind of a devotion. It felt very like knight and the lady waiting kind of relationship where it was like complete devotion and without any of the rest of the complication of romantic love. And I just felt like him being like, "Nah, I got this. I will stay with her till the end of time." Like that is beautiful. And
I know, it's so sweet.
her journey with like wrestling with that and with her inner turmoil, him devoting himself to her, all of their like, I don't know, whenever he would like just put his arm and catch whatever bullet she's throwing at everybody, it was, I just thought it was beautiful. And I walked in thinking that Icarus and Circe were going to be my favorite. And I walked out with Gilgamesh and Athena being my favorite. And also Macari and Druid, but definitely Athena and Gilgamesh. Like, obsessed. Obsessed. And I'm Angelina Jolie, like deeply obsessed
Oh, I know.
person. I love Angelina.
And
Yeah. But I didn't know how much I was gonna love Gilgamesh. I'm with you. I walked out and I was just like, dear man. Like, dearest man.
I'm in love with you. Thank you. And you, like when he gets killed, I'm like,
Oh,
no, not him.
devastated.
I was like,
Devastated.
no. And just like Angelina Jolie, like Athena was crying, and I felt it deep within my soul. I was like, I feel you. I
Yeah,
just.
because I think we don't get to see like someone who's physically strong. Like you see his strength. He's a bigger, he's taller. He's got this very like aggressive power. And then here he is emotionally vulnerable, emotionally showing up for this woman that, I felt like it's such a beautiful portrayal. In general, I also think like as an Asian man in that role, I think it's important. I think there's so many layers to the beauty of that character, the beauty of what they portrayed in him. And I think Don Lee just like did a gorgeous job with everything. I love him. I love him. I love him. I want more. I'm
Too.
so devastated. If they don't give us more, I'm all right. I'm gonna be mad because I think they're doing prequel stuff, which I hope they are, because I want to just see them through the ages. But like, I need more. I don't care. I don't care if he comes back. I don't care. AI reboot. I don't bring him back.
Exactly. I don't even care. Just bring him back, because I was, like you said, devastated when that moment happened. I'm like, oh, no, don't do that. I was like, come back,
Which then
please.
takes us on to Athena, who I want to be her when I grow up because I love her.
And I've always, like, even the, like, Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider movies, I absolutely loved her in those. So, like, it was kind of like going back to that. And I was like, I love you. I'm like, you were amazing. Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, Wanted and Salt and Mr. and Mrs. Smith, like, every action film she's ever been in. Yeah. But then she's so good dramatically, and she's a fantastic actress in general. But she's got the chops to do action, and also the, like, she is pulling, like, not pulling any punches in this movie. Like, she is giving it everything. And I think that's just what Angelina brings to a role. And then to put her in a superhero movie is like, oh, you know, maybe it's a stunt thing because it's Angelina. No, she's so fantastic and nuanced in that she's wrestling with this, thing inside of her that she can't control. And, like, that's her family, and she's fighting them, and she doesn't mean to. And, like, I don't know. I thought it was so phenomenal. I've loved her for my entire life. And I thought she was the one I was so most excited about joining the MCU. And I was not wrong.
Yeah.
About my excitement.
Totally loved her. I'm going her to. Oh, yeah. Her look looked fantastic. It's like, and I'm like, I know everybody is obsessed with it. So I was like, oh, I'm like, it looks so fantastic. I love it. And she just looks effortless. Like, I honestly, just literally effortless. Like, she just walked in and was like, hello, I'm Angelina.
She's the literal goddess, like, on our planet. So she should be eternal in a movie. Like, 100%.
And, like, the nerdy part in me was, like, so excited when she's talking to Gemma Chan, when she's talking to Cersei. A part of me was like, if I was Gemma Chan, if that was me, I'd be like, oh my God, Angelina Jolie, we're in a scene together. Like, I would be dying. And
I'd freak out.
They're both absolutely, like, stunning and great at what they do. It made me even more excited. I was like, look at these wonderful women, and they're both, like, helping each other. This is fantastic. Like, I loved it. I loved that it was almost, it kind of gave me, like, a feeling of somebody who is in the movies, who is recognized as a strong, beautiful, talented woman, was passing on a torch to another strong, beautiful woman, talented woman. And I just thought about
both Salma and Angelina, because I think they've been in the business forever. They're both like, to me, there's like a matriarchy of the MCU that includes, like, Michelle Pfeiffer and Rachel Weisz, and, like, now, you know, and Michelle Yao. And, like, there's matriarchy in my brain building of these, like, older established women that are fantastic, that have been in the business and now have joined the MCU in these, like, fantastic, just gravitas roles. And I feel like Salma and Angelina joined that rank for me. They're part of the MCU matriarchy that's living in my brain. And I do agree with you. It is like passing the torch on and, like, establishing the movie with these, like, powerhouse women. There is also a patriarchy. There's a fantastic MCU patriarchy of, like, Michael Douglas and, like, established older male actors, Robert Redford, you know, that have done the same for the men. But I think we're really seeing this gorgeous, you know, opportunity for the women to come in and do the same, whereas the men have been doing it since the beginning. Like, you've got Jeff Bridges in Iron Man day one, right? So, like, I think now we're getting the women who are coming in and just being that for the MCU. And that's what just fills my heart with joy. And that's what Angelina Jolie and Salma Hayek are for me, like, 100%.
When we had the one scene where Salma Hayek is talking to Angelina Jolie and she's, like, holding her face and stuff. And I was like, my two favorite people are on screen right now. I'm not crying. You're fine. It was just something in me. I can't even explain just how excited I was just to see that interaction, being like, I hope they're all best friends. Like, that was what my main thing was. Like, I hope they're all best friends and I hope they hang out on weekends. Like, I was that excited.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think it's something very feminine in us that's, like, responding to that as people who have loved, as women who have loved those women and watched them on the screen forever for our lives. I mean, they've been in Hollywood since we were younger. And I think that there's just something that's really powerful, viscerally feminine, that's, like, awakened when we see that.
Yeah.
Sorry, dudes, like, maybe you feel it too, or if you don't identify as a woman and you feel it, like, you're welcome into the tribe, into the coven. But, like, I just feel like there's something very just awakened by that sort of powerful femininity in those leadership, power, strong roles, that just, like, it's very visceral to me. And it just felt like times a billion. Let's talk, you know what's interesting? So let's talk about Sprite, because on the opposite end of that is this is this powerful character stuck in a child's body. And I thought a lot of people didn't like it. I thought it was an interesting angle to have her be in love with Icarus. I thought that was such an interesting, she can't do anything about it. She's in a child's body. He doesn't see her that way, but she has lived the life they've all lived. And she doesn't get to have any of the benefits of being a wise, older, like being. That's fascinating.
I know. And like, just imagine, like, because it's fine being a child when you're a child, but then eventually you grow up and you get older and you, you know, you do all the other things that you do as adults. And like, just not being able to, it's one thing that you're like, if you set yourself, like, I want to stay a child forever, like a Peter Pan situation, which again, they made that reference in the movie, but to be forced to be put in that as a child and not have any say in it is heartbreaking. And the fact that Sprite was like, why did Arishem put me, like, why did he make me a child? Why did he make me in this body? Whereas everyone else gets to be an adult, but I don't. Why? And you can feel like you can feel that pain in her just going, I don't understand. I don't want to be in this. And I totally understood it. I'm like, there's a lot of times where you're just like, and I took it not as a child adult type thing. I just took it as a, you know, in moments where when I was younger, I'd be like, well, I have this skin color. Why is this skin color? I'm not as pretty, or I'm not as this is. And a lot of that, I was relating it on a different level. But it, like at some point in time, all of us have had a moment where we're like, why are we like this? Why did, you know, if you believe in a higher power, why did God put me in this? Or why am I like this? Why was I born this way kind of thing? And it just, it's heartbreaking when you have that moment or that realization. And I think that's what connected me with Sprite, was that moment of just complete sadness and wondering, why am I like this? I can't change it. And just being heartbroken about it.
Well, yeah. And what's interesting is I think it's funny that they brought in the Peter Pan connection, because Peter Pan chooses to stay childlike in his mind as well and in his soul. And that's not Sprite's story. She's not mentally young. She's not. Her soul isn't young. I mean, she has all this life experience and she's lived every experience every other Eternal has. She just can't physically do with her body what everybody else can. And that's falling in love or having, you know, having sex or anything like that. You can't, because you're put in this form that you had no control about. And that, you know, she's been able to live every other, you know, crazy life experience, and yet here she is stuck in a body that doesn't let her do what she's mentally wanting to do, and like falling in love with Icarus and like all that. I thought that was a really interesting layer to add to the Eternal. I mean, it's like a weird one, because it's like, why? Because no one else has like a thing like that. Like, why isn't anyone else a child? Or like, why isn't any of an old man? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
I thought that was weird, but also like, I didn't hate it, because I thought it added an interesting layer to her character. Yeah. Did it need to be there? I don't know, but it was.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know who the other characters, so we haven't talked about the other three, Makari came out of nowhere for me. Like, I mean, I get excited about characters who I'm like, yay, they have like, you know, they have brown skin, or, you know, I just get excited because I'm like, if I want to cosplay it, cosplay a character, then that's the character I usually, you know, gravitate towards. Sure. So to have her be such a fantastic character, I was so happy. I was like, look at her just, and it wasn't like even her interactions with Druig, you knew that they both liked each other and you knew that they had something there, but it wasn't like blatant until like the end. But I absolutely just loved, I can't even describe how excited I was to have her on the screen and being on the screen and showing her powers. Like, I loved every moment of her character on screen.
Yeah, agreed. And to implement the sign language aspect, to have that sort of representation as well. I just felt like the way they lit, because what we were talking about with Salma keeping having her accent and everything, I feel like they just let everybody bring in who they were to the role, which is so authentic to a group of eclectic Eternals from all over the, with different background, you know, like this, they don't have different backgrounds. They all have the same background. But I mean, I feel like that is what you'd want from that. You'd want to see those pieces of culture and those pieces of, you know, representation and languages And I think that having sign language on the screen is gorgeous. I loved it. I love sign language in general. I've always wanted to learn it. I know a little bit. I've always, when I was a nanny, I would teach like baby sign language and have like, give the kids at least another like way to communicate. And I think I have such a connection to sign language and it just throughout my whole life. And I think it's just beautiful to see, imagine a person who is deaf seeing that on the screen. It's just, right. I don't know. I thought it was amazing. And I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. And her character being, I think sometimes this is what happens to women. It's either like, look how powerful they are. Except for when it comes to the fight, they get first one hit.
Yeah.
Or they're so powerful that they don't have, you know, like almost, I don't want to harp on this, but this is how I feel, is a Captain Marvel situation where then we don't have any vulnerability and we're just like so powerful, we never get knocked down. And there's, we're not either of those tent poles. We're so new. We as women are so nuanced. And I think Makari's showing her power against Icarus. She held her own with everybody else, just as you would if you were a powerful being.
Yeah.
You know? And I loved that. I loved that. That was, she didn't get reduced to like, oh, girl with a power, you know?
Yeah. And I'm going to move on really quickly to Festos because we'll go back to Druid, but I'm jumping to Festos because I loved Festos. And I love, you were saying that, you know, they got to be their own character and they got to be their own, play themselves pretty much. Like they didn't have to change anything about them. Brian Tyree Henry, who plays Festos, was, when he was cast, he thought that he was going to have to lose weight because he's like, oh, superhero, gotta look the part. And was told, no, you're perfect. Like you're fine just the way you are. You're perfect just the way you are. You don't need to change your physical appearance. He was like, that meant so much to him. I loved seeing that. I loved, again, seeing a man who was, we got to see a softer side of him as well. We got to see his strength, but we also got to see the softness, which as we need to be seeing more men who can show their softer sides as well, because, you know, a lot of, I know back in our generation, like it was, you know, you have to be man enough kind of thing, but it doesn't mean that you can't be soft as like, not soft in a bad way. Like, I mean, like you can be in touch with your sensitive side. It's not a bad thing. It's a great thing. You should be able to be in touch with the emotional aspect of who you are. And I loved seeing that. I had been talking to somebody today actually, and who was like, oh, I didn't like, cause he does play a gay man and he's married to to an Arab man. And the person I was talking to was like, oh, well, I didn't like that because they showed an Arab man who might be Muslim and Muslim. And I was like, you know what? We can't have this conversation because yes, I am Muslim, but I appreciate representation in all its forms. The LGBTQ plus community is everywhere in as Muslims or any other religion or, you know, no religion, whatever, but they're literally everywhere. Like all humans are. And this person had been telling me like, oh, you know, that's, because I was like, well, they promote heteronormative relationships on us all the time. And the person's like, well, you know, that's normal. And I'm like, no, what do you mean it's normal? The LGBTQ plus community has been around for years, centuries, forever. It's not something brand new. It's only that they're now being allowed to be represented on screen. But it's not like they haven't been around. They have been. And the fact that you think that is the reason why we need more representation. And I loved the fact that they were so respectful of this relationship, that it wasn't like, I didn't feel like it was just like they hadn't, like, you know, how people are always like, there's an agenda. And I'm like, whatever. This just felt, here's a normal couple. I'm like, this is just a couple, just like everybody else. It's a couple. This is how it would be living there.
They portrayed it beautifully. I felt like it was a great way. I mean, I obviously we could go on and on about representation being far too overdue and why wait so long and blah blah blah, but let's also take what we get, because we know how we feel about that. We've been saying this forever, and if you've been listening, Guardians fans, you know how we feel about this. Always bring it in, do the right thing, be representative. Right. So here we are, as long as we're on the same page. But what I loved about it is exactly what you're saying, is the way that him falling in love and having a family and Like, imagine living hundreds of years, hundreds of years, and knowing how frail humans are. What do you get, like 90 years out of these two? Like,
that,
you know, 60 years out of his partner, maybe 90 years out of the kid. And that's it. I mean, that's like all he will get with them. And that's a pinprick in the scope of his life. But to change his mission, to change his worldview, to save his family, to put that first, even though they will never live as long as he will, they will never understand what it's like to be an Eternal, is such a gorgeous, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful portrayal of love and devotion in a different kind of a way than what we've been talking about. We're seeing a lot of, that's what I really connected with in the film, is the different ways that they chose to show devotion and love and family and in so many different ways. Even Icarus is showing a kind of devotion. It's a toxic devotion that's unwielding and unwavering, but it is a devotion of kind. And I think that that's such a central theme of the movie. And so his devotion to his family changes his whole worldview. That blew my mind, as like a thousand years, and like this very frail to humans changes his whole life. Exactly. That seems funny to me, but also beautiful.
And the fact that when we last see him, he's breaking down because of what humanity has done with the knowledge and information he's given them. It's heartbreaking, because he's sobbing. And to be able to go from that to be able to see the beauty in human beings and being able to fall in love with a human is like, it can you imagine the steps it must have taken him to get to that moment? And it's just, it's so, and I loved just, they were so adorable, like so adorable with the kid. Like the kid, first of all, was adorable. I don't know the name of the actor who plays the little kid, but he is so cute.
Little precious.
So adorable. And like, I loved that they showed the family dynamic, because that is normal. It is normal. There are, you know, people who have two dads or two moms, or, you know, whatever the case is, they have different family dynamics. And it's important that we should be seeing these things on screen. As a teacher, it's very important, because I know that there are kids that are still, you know, they get, not in my class, but I know that there are kids who think that, oh, you know, this is not normal, and it needs to become normal. It needs to be seen so that people realize, yeah, this is a normal thing. It's not bizarre. It shouldn't be, you know, your automatic reaction shouldn't go, well, they're forcing this on us, or they're portraying this, and this isn't normal, because it is normal. For people who are in that community are like, hey, this is our lives, and it is normal. We are normal human beings. So the fact that people don't think that is 100% the reason why it is important to be seen, especially in a Marvel movie where a lot of people watch it.
Yeah, agreed. And I agree. I want to go back to what you were saying about Hiroshima and the moment when he's sort of like devastated by his creation leading to that moment in our own history. And that's what I was, when I walked in the movie, I thought we were going to really get to see more of that, is like the Eternals throughout our history, which we got a little bit of, but I did want a lot more of that. And I thought that moment was powerful, as somebody who's done just a ton of like research, and my dad's big World War One, II buff. And so I've heard about World War One and Two for my whole life. And Hiroshima is something I've always been very aware of because of that. And it's such a horrible moment in our history of just, I don't need to get into that. We're running out of time, but like, just something that is gutting to me as a person. And I wasn't even alive. And I loved that moment for him. I thought that I really connected with his devastation of having taught humanity technology and innovation, and this is where they went with it. Isn't, what part does he have to play in that? What part do I have to play in the history of my people, in the history of the people who have taken my inventions and used them? I think that's such a, we could just have a whole podcast about that issue right there, that conversation. But that, I connected with that, and I thought that him coming out of that eventually and giving humans a second chance by even falling in love with one was gorgeous. I thought that was a beautiful layer, which leads us to Druig.
Oh, Druig.
Honestly, okay. Did not know I was going to love him. I did not know.
Yeah.
What? Wasn't ready.
And I, the minute where he was thinking, like, my heart would break every time he was like, but I want to, we can stop this. And I was like,
my God, he's right.
He's not wrong at all. Like, he's 100% correct. And my heart just, every time, you could almost see it throughout every mission or throughout like the flashbacks, you can see his heart breaking to eventually the point where it does break. And he's like, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to go. And you can see it kind of breaking. He does take it to, you know, almost an extreme when we see him again. And he's kind of like controlled the entire town. And you're like, I get where he's coming from because he wants to protect them. But at the same time, he's now controlling them. So it's an odd thing where he's at. And I think even he is trying to kind of wrestle with that as well. And I loved his trail of thought kind of thing.
Yeah. And I just didn't expect to like him. Like when I saw him in the trailers, I was like, and another Eternal, like whatever. But there was something so pure about, but I can do something, but why wouldn't I, if I could? And then even, you know, him coming back to the Eternals at the end and joining in and being like, yeah, oh, we're finally going to do something. Great. Obviously his relationship with Makari, which obviously I'm obsessed with.
So perfect. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine. I'm gushing because I really expected Icarus to continue to hold my heart as much as he did from the moment I saw that Richard Madden was going to be in the MCU. And I just didn't expect for like Gilgamesh and Druig to walk out with like more of it than I thought. I just didn't expect it, Sheba.
Yeah. You know who else I didn't expect? First of all, Karun.
Do it.
The valet, Karun.
I was going to mention him if you weren't. I'm obsessed with him.
Me too. Like, first of all, I loved that they included Hindi in there. And then just like, there were parts where I was like, I understand that. I didn't even need the captioning. I'm like, yay.
Yeah. How many characters did he have?
I love them. And I just loved at the end that he was like, thank you for all that you've done kind of thing. Like humanity thanks you and then walks away. And I was like, I'm not crying. You are. I loved it.
I mean, I love that. That's like the driver. Wait, yeah. In Shang-Chi, like the driver was just like there.
Yeah. Yep. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, sure.
I love that. Like every man person that's just like, there, like, props to Karun. Like, can he be in more?
Yes, please. Yeah, I would do the whole movie of him just by himself, just doing random things with him and Camille and Johnny, just doing their own thing. Like, I would just love to see more of that. Because,
what if Karun is just like there with the camera forever? Like, he's just filming every Marvel, like Avenger from here on out. He's just there with the camera. he's doing a documentary for Kingo.
And I feel like it would be like, and I feel like he and Peter could kind of like relate to things, and Peter would be like, oh, maybe you should try this. Oh, you should. And just, they'd be like nerding it up. It would just be really funny. And I need to see more of him in the MCU.
I would love Peter to meet Karun. Like, how do we get that happening?
Right. Because he would be so excited. And Karun could teach him like, you know, tricks and like how to do things. And Peter would be like, oh, cool. I'm going to include this in my, and it would just be hilarious. And they would make like an MCU, like behind like the Marvel, behind the scenes type thing. Like, it would just be hilarious. Just
Karun would teach Peter how to hide 5 cameras on his person.
Exactly.
He'd be like, you keep one in your back pocket and one between your legs and one in your shoulder bone.
Just randomly in random places. It'd be so great.
Okay, so we can't stop talking about characters before we talk about Dane. We have to talk about the other King of the North, which real tough life, Cersei, being stuck between two kings of the Stark men. Okay. Two.
When Kit Harington's like, hi, I'm Dane, and introduces himself to Richard Madden, to Icarus, I was like, inside my nerdness of me was like freaking out because I was like, look, it's like a reunion. It's a Game of Thrones reunion. I'm like having a freak out moment.
Same. I was like,
I was like,
oh my God, it's you, the same Cersei.
I was like, whoa, I know. I was like, whoa, like, it's happening. It's so great.
In an interview, someone asked Richard Madden if it was weird saying like Cersei over and over again, because because of Game of Thrones. And he's like, no, it was definitely weirder that Kit was there, that we were both together again. And I was like, ah, I love it. I love the Stark Boys reunion. Give me all of the Game of Thrones people. Give me all of them in the MCU. Yeah. So Jane, I didn't know who he was. Obviously, like, had no idea like what part he would play. And the whole time I kept being like, you about to get Kit Harington in this movie and then have him like not be in the movie.
Yeah.
But I know what we're doing. We're setting it up for the future. I get it. But I the whole time I was like, okay, but what? It's freaking Kit Harington. Mm-hmm. You're gonna have Jon Snow in your movie and you don't use them?
Yeah. I was like,
do all the things he did to join the Marvel Universe and not do anything, okay?
Yeah.
Give him a sword. Why did he come in here?
And then they did give him a sword at the end. So you were like, oh, there you go. And that scene, though, was so great because, first of all, he's adorable in that scene in general. And the minute the voice comes up and he's like, oh, I don't know if you want to do that kind of thing, I was like, oh, that's Marshall Lee. Like, I know, 100%.
I didn't realize it was him.
See, I just, the minute the movie ended, my friend was like, who do you think it is? I'm like, it's Blade, obviously. And they're like, oh, right. I'm like, listen, I've watched Into the Spider-Verse enough times to recognize Mahershala Ali's voice by now. That's him. And they're like, oh, yeah, it could be him. I'm like, it's not, it could be. It is him. And then later on, they're like, yeah, it was him. I'm like, I know.
With Mahershala, he has used so many different inflections in movies that, like, I don't know what his Blade voice sounded like. So I was totally not prepared for it to be Blade. And then when I went and did like research and everything, obviously I was like, obviously it's somebody. Yeah. And then I was like, oh my God, I can't wait. Because you and I both know what it was like in Hall H when Mahershala walked out. And it was like,
I know. And I'm like, it's about time, because I'm like, I've been waiting for a long time for this man to, you know, to be Blade. Where is he?
You've been waiting two and a half years to hear any mention of Blade in the MCU.
Exactly. So the fact that like it was funny because everyone's like, oh, who do you think that is? I was like, Blade. And they're like, oh yeah. And I'm like, I knew it. And then they sent my friend sent in the group message after, we're like, yeah, it's confirmed. I'm like, oh, I thought it was already confirmed. Because in my mind,
I confirmed it for you.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know. I told you this, so why is this brand new information to all of you?
That's funny.
Yeah,
I didn't know. So you win the Marvel Prize because you knew, and I definitely had no idea. I was like, ooh, somebody important, but who is it? Oh, okay, we cannot forget to mention the elephant in the room, my dear sweet love of all time, Harry Styles.
See, I remember we talked about it on Guardians and somebody was like, yeah, he's going to be in it. So I was like, oh, okay. I guess that maybe they were saying that he was in the movie because he's going to be purple because he's Thanos' brother. So people wouldn't recognize him. So that's why they had to say it. And then I forgot about it the entire movie. I was like, totally forgot about it. And then we had an end credit scene and they popped up like, oh, right. I forgot he was in this movie, but he's also not purple. So
I got mad because it definitely was spoiled. I hate that it was spoiled because I feel like it ruined the surprise for me. And I was really mad about it. It was ruined. I adore him. I literally a month ago, I went to his concert. Yeah. I'm obsessed. I love Harry. I think it's an interesting stunt cast, but it's so, when I went and looked at like shots of him, his character in the comics, it's perfection. It's the perfect casting.
Yeah. And I honestly, totally, I was so excited about the movie that like, I was so worried about the movie being like, because of all what all the critics said, that I had completely forgotten he was in the movie. And then when he popped up, I was like, oh, right. So it was still a surprise because I had forgotten about it. I was like, oh, right. I forgot people had said this, but I thought he was going to be in the main part of the movie. So when he did, like, I had completely forgotten about it. And then he popped in and I was like, oh, okay. He's in an end credit. All right, cool. So it hadn't bothered me as much.
The spoiler I had seen said it was end credit. So I was waiting. I knew it was coming later. And I just was so like annoyed that I knew that.
Yeah.
But it didn't color my view of the movie. It just was like, I wished I could have had that be a surprise and it wasn't. And I hate when that happens, but it is what it is. So I love him. I love him. And I think it's a great casting choice and I'm excited to see where they go with it is what I will say about that.
I'm excited to see Patton Oswalt being Pip because that's very excited because Patton Oswalt is a great, great character, a great actor. And I'm just glad he's in the MCU now too.
And nerd fam. He's like, you know, OG nerd. So like he loves all this and Seeing someone who loves it be in it is always exciting to me. I love that.
Exactly.
We sort of have to rapid fire every single thing else about the movie because we,
yep. Oops.
As usual, got in depth. Don't be mad. We got into it. That's what we do.
Exactly.
Okay, things on our list. CGI. Let me just say, some of it was rough.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it felt real rough, especially Pip. Pip felt rough to me.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, cool.
That one was like, ooh. I'm like, good thing it's only an end credit because, oops.
Like, ugh. And sometimes when Icarus was flying, there was one scene when Cena was like doing a flip on one of the deviants. And I was like, okay, I feel like we're farther along than this, but it's also a gigantic task of epic proportion. So I'm going to give it a pass, but I definitely felt it in some of the scenes. It was a little, wasn't even an uncanny valley. It was just full on valley.
Yeah.
No, uncanny, just the valley.
Yeah. You're like, oh, yikes. That's okay.
Yeah.
But you know, I was just like, all right, I'll let it slide. But yeah, there were some awkward CGI moments.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've covered whether or not we think the critics are correct. It's not the worst Marvel movie. Because I think the story is strong. And I think what is me and my least favorite Marvel movie, let's all say it together, Thor: The Dark World.
Mine's Iron Man 2, so.
Iron Man 2?
Yeah, mine's Iron Man 2.
Bless you. That's my second least favorite. Thank God. The boys are gone. This is what you get, John and Tim, for not seeing movies. We go rogue, baby.
Exactly.
So those are my favorite Marvel movies, and what bugs me is the story and the character development. And that, if you get those right, I will forgive CGI. I will forgive bad Bollywood dance moves. I will forgive maybe you forgot this continuity point. I'll forgive any freaking thing if you can get the story and the character development underway. Like, I'm in. But that's, I think, the Thor: The Dark World and Iron Man 2, you guys all already know how I feel about it, but those missed the mark. So if you're talking worst Marvel movies, it doesn't even come close. It's not even the bottom five.
Yeah, that's why when people were like, when I walked out of the theater, I was like, worst Marvel movie? Where? Like, and I know people were like, oh, the plot was too much, it was overstuffed and things. And again, like I said, I was of the mind that they're going to explain. If there's things that I don't know, they'll explain to me at some point. I've watched enough Marvel movies to know it'll all work out at the end kind of thing. So it wasn't that big of a deal for me in terms of that. Because I know people were saying like, it was just too much and not enough character development. But for me, I was like, it worked out for me and it was okay. I didn't see any problem with it.
Always use more character development, more of the things that make a Marvel movie what it is. I mean, I'm not going to lie and say that I can't always use more, but I can. And I think what we've discussed in the beginning is it is packed full. It is packed full. But I think what they got right was the familial connection between all of the Eternals. I think everybody got a bright moment in the sun, even if they weren't Cersei or Icarus or Ajax. And I think that you really felt like you got to know all of them by the end, and that's a tall order. But if you can put like 300 Avengers in Endgame, then you can tell the story of like what, 8-9 Eternals? Like, get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. We didn't
think if anyone could do it, it's Marvel.
Yeah. And we clearly didn't get enough character development for all of the characters in Infinity War and Endgame. So I mean,
no.
That are complaining about it here are like, well, I mean, it's okay. It will be fine.
Now, one of our other questions here is, would Marvel not have another diverse movie like this because they're worried about positive reviews or not? I don't think that that's the case. I think that I think Kevin Feige, once he decides he's going to go somewhere, he said, stay with me, fam. Like, maybe you're not getting it here, but you're going to get it on the next one. Because Dark World wasn't like a smash hit, I don't think. Yeah. And it didn't stop them from going into Ragnarok and completely rewriting the wheel. So I think what they do is listen, and they definitely hear what people say. I don't think that they're like, la, 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 I don't hear you.
Yeah.
But I think what they do very well is pivot when something isn't working or isn't responding. I don't think diversity is the problem. I don't think that, I don't think representation is the problem, and I don't think the cast is the problem. I think if they're going to solve it, it's going to be, let's drop down and really focus in on three of the Eternals or four of the Eternals and have everybody else, now that they're all known, have them come in as cameos, but let's really focus in and have them get their own stories as they're interacting with Avengers, as they're interacting with Guardians or whoever else they're going to interact with in the future. I think that that's the direction that they'll go, but that's the direction everybody in the MCU is going in. It's not about building to the big Avengers endgame sort of level. It's really telling nuanced, individual, intimate stories. And I think that's what they did. Whether or not you felt that they did that correctly or to your level of what you wanted, they did that.
Yep, exactly. And I think that even though, because I know people are like, well, Marvel's been in it for long, they should know how to make an introductory movie for characters. And I'm like, no, they're doing something. They did something different here. They did something different in terms of how they presented the story. And it's still new in that way. It's still an introductory movie for all these characters where they're not famous. Like, they're not a Spider-Man. They're not, you know, Thor. They're not the characters that we know everything about. Like, I know a lot about Spider-Man kind of thing. The Eternals, I know very little. So this was my introductory to them. And I was focusing in on it like, hey, if I get one issue of a comic, they don't give me all the information all at once.
Right. And when I get
a comic, I'm like, but I need to know more of this. And sometimes I pick it up like much later and they're like, you have to go to this volume, and it gives you a little asterisk and you have to go to that volume to read about it. It doesn't mean that you can't understand the comic in that perspective, but if you go to pick up that comic, then it'll fill in some of those blanks, but it's not going to ruin the comic you're reading now. So I just getting that. Yeah, sorry. That's how I took it. Oh no, that's how I took this movie, was that it is very much a comic related movie, that there are things that are not, that are unanswered, or that we may need other issues for, but we'll get them later. They'll happen at some point.
That's interesting about, that's what Marvel's been doing the whole time. Right. And I think it's interesting, this sort of, this conversation comes in, because it's come in before, and it'll come in again when people start to, like, I don't know, there's the Marvel fatigue conversation. I think that's what is really the underlying situation. Yeah. Is like, are we done with these? Like, obviously not. Are you done with comic books? Are you done with reading like anything that you love to read? I think that, like, what they've set up is a precedent of stay along the ride, and you're and like, there will be pieces that will be directly for you. Mm-hmm. And you're going to interact with those more than maybe others, but they're all part of a big story. I mean, like, if every single movie in the world resonated with me, I'd be the one making them. You know what I mean? Like, someone like me would have been the one making them. And isn't that more beautiful when we can say, oh my gosh, you know, like what you're saying about the Dishun, like Dishun. Like, is it so beautiful that you had that moment, had it meant nothing to me. I didn't even know anything about it. I didn't even hear it. I didn't even hear it being said. But like, that was for you. And like, I can go back now knowing you and hearing about that story and having a moment of appreciation for that being included, even though I had no idea it even happened, because it wasn't for me. And I think that that is what we have to look at when a studio like this is taking on something as huge as creating a visual comic book canon. That is insane. If you think about it that way, that's what they're doing, and they're doing it well. And so I think that that argument is so ridiculous. And I think a lot of times the critics are the people who aren't the fans. They aren't reading comics. They don't know the stories. They're just critiquing it from a movie standpoint. That, I would say, maybe it's fair. Maybe just from a basic movie standpoint, if you don't like comics, if you're not a Marvel fan, then maybe you should listen to the critics, because they're not either. So like, but if you're a fan, this is the way. I mean, it literally is. I don't know how else they could have done it any better.
Exactly.
Go back and rewrite history. Go make your own. I don't know. Like, I think there's plenty of room for criticism as well, not to erase, because there is a lot of criticism that can be put into the Marvel Universe. There's so many more things we could be doing. There are things that they've done that they've gotten very wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's all. I don't want to erase criticism just because I'm like really positive and loving the journey. I'm not unaware of the fact that there are points that like could be done very better or that are harmful. I know there's a lot of discourse about what's happening in Ms. Marvel that is questionable, and that we can really had some thoughtful conversation about That doesn't mean that when it comes out, there might not be things that really resonate or are fun that we can't really have a nuanced conversation. If you're going to turn it into a black and white, is it good or bad? Then you miss me with that. Miss me with that conversation. But like, let's, you know, I really loved it. I think you really loved it. And I think if you want to go watch it and tell us what you think, then you should come talk to us on Twitter or Instagram because we want to hear about it.
Exactly.
Or the Discord channel or anywhere else. Like that's the beauty of movies. What do we have all have to agree about it? Absolutely not. Like all the fact that you and I do is just because we're besties.
Yeah, exactly. We can all have
like the same bodies. Okay, whatever. Get over it.
Exactly. We can disagree about things and still appreciate, you know, we can appreciate the good and we can, you know, talk about the things that need to be worked on. That's what we do that's what being a normal human being is.
Yeah, it's not a perfect movie. No one's saying it is. But we both loved it. So take that with a grain of salt and go watch it and talk to us about it. Tell us what you think. And hopefully the boys will see it one day and we can talk to them.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, Sheba. You know, I always love talking to you, Marvel or anything else.
Great.
And now I'm going to have to see it again and just think, see it through your eyes. Cause I always like to see things through other people's eyes and obviously just deserves multiple viewings in general. I think every Marvel movie does. I will be watching Shang-Chi this weekend now that it's on Disney Plus because I want to return Shang-Chi so bad.
I rewatched it as like I was working out and had playing it in the background at the same time. And I was just like, my workout was so much more interesting. And then literally every other time it was, oh, I love Tony Leung. Oh, look at him. Look at his, and I love Simu, don't get me wrong, but it's just, I've been standing Tony Leung for since this movie. So, you know.
Yeah. 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 That's me with Michelle Yao, just like completely obsessed. Anyway, sorry, we're getting into another movie. Oh, we could do 8 podcasts in a row. Okay, thank you guys for joining us for this episode of the Guardians of the MCU, and we will catch you next time. We could literally go for hours.